Blog Talk Radio. Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome once again to the Elevated Places Network. Tonight we present Ask Minister Ava with myself, Ava Muhammad, my co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, and we are also very happy and need to have the presence of our executive producer, Sister Rona Muhammad, and our legal contributor, Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad, who hosts her own program on the Elevated Places Network entitled A Time for Justice. And I just can't say enough about that program and the brilliant legal minds that are brought to us each and every Tuesday evening. And of course, all of you are able to connect with us either by logging into blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces or calling us at 563-999-3065. And of course, as happens every Thursday night, our callers are queuing up. And if you find yourself unable to get in the call queue, as the screen is showing, we are filling up rapidly, then you can always hear this program again by logging in at blogtalkradio.com/elevatedplaces. We are very blessed to be with you once again. We have some announcements to make. There is a lot happening. We have a wonderful program and a wonderful guest tonight. We're going to get into that shortly. But of course, to start us out, in the midst of all this news, everything from the return of the COVID restrictions and the spread of the virus by vaccinated people to the debacle in Afghanistan, everything imaginable is happening. And of course, you can keep up with not only world events, but you receive guidance and wisdom from the only true 100% independent black newspaper, the Final Call newspaper. The publisher is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. And we're going to be bringing something from the pages of this week's Final Call newspaper. We've just been having week after week of explosive articles. And I have to give a shout out to Brother Alan Muhammad and the Nation of Islam Research Group. this week's article. I'm calling it an article, but it's absolutely amazing. And we'll talk a little bit about that during the course of the program. But without further ado, I will at this time turn the microphone over to my illustrious co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Terrence. You know what? I apologize.
Oh, there we go.
I apologize.
No problem.
I am so sorry. I'm so excited to have you. I forgot to click the mic. Yes,
it is all right. Well, walaikum salam. We are here once again. It is that time, Thursday night. And, you know, for the callers that did not know, we did have a replay last week. We were moving around at the same time. So we were we was not able to get to you all. But I know you all was tuning in. I had people tap to me and let me know that they were still tuning in last week, which is a wonderful thing to know. But we're here, and we're back, and we are excited to be here. There's a lot we want to announce, a lot that we got going on. I'm not going to even talk about Friday. I'm not going to even talk about tomorrow night. We're going to come back and let Dr. Ava tell you about what's happening special for you all tomorrow night. But we do want to make sure that you're here Sunday, as you've been hearing powerful lectures on Sunday at 10 a.m. Central, 11 a.m. Eastern on NOI.org, and we want to make sure that you come back and continue to hear those powerful messages, as well as hearing Minister Farrakhan on Wednesday nights at 7:30 p.m. And as I said, we'll come back to tomorrow night. But as Dr. Ava said, get your latest edition of the Final Call newspaper at finalcalldigital.com, finalcalldigital.com. You do not want to miss out on that. And it's very interesting, Dr. Avon, when you said Afghanistan. I won't go into much of it. I won't go into a lot of it. I just want to quote President Biden, or paraphrase. He said, "We will not forgive. We will not forget." I said, "Wow, you say you ain't going to even forgive them. You ain't going to forget." I said, "Okay, you talking kind of strong." So we will be seeing what pans out around this that we are now witnessing in the news. And we got to remember, the minister has addressed us and given us the criterion, and we know what that is, July 4th, 2020, a message that we need to pay attention to. And we are seeing more and more things going around the issue of vaccination and this COVID-19 and the Delta variant. And we do have a special article in the Final Call newspaper to help you to deal and live healthy, and some good tips to be able to increase your immunity and live healthier. But like I said, there's a Friday announcement coming as well. Now, Dr. Ava, I just wanted to go quickly over some things that I wanted to share about last week that I was in Minneapolis. Minnesota first. I flew into Park, Fargo, North Dakota, and then I went to Park Rapids, Minnesota, and I went over there to go to a camp that they were stopping and fighting a pipeline, Line 3 pipeline. There was a camp, and if you wasn't invited to the camp, you would not even know where the camp is. It was back in the woods, but they were aggressively fighting against this pipeline. They have accumulated $100,000+ in bail bonds that people have been getting arrested and trying to fight against this pipeline. But in the midst of fighting, they found out local authorities were involved in sex trafficking. So that was a governmental sting of the folks that they was fighting against around the pipeline, and the local people were there, and they actually discovered a sex ring and trafficking going on in that area, which was very, very interesting. And then we went down to Minneapolis, and we met with a collective of people and delegation that came from Brazil, that came from Dominican Republic, Canada, Mexico, and the Amazon. And we were talking. They actually came here to talk about our struggle and how they can learn more of what they can do as far as the struggle. And it was very interesting and very powerful conversation that I had. with them last week. But the scary thing, Dr. Ava, the scariest thing of all when I was out there in Fargo, North Dakota, and when I got to Minneapolis, I saw the strangest thing, and I know Sister Pamela will understand. I saw this white woman with two black children at my hotel. Like, what in the world is this? They were really black, and you knew that it wasn't like she the mama, she got a black husband. It wasn't none of that. These were black children that more than likely she adopted. And then I saw it again, and I think I saw it either twice in North Dakota, and I think I saw it once in Minneapolis or reversed twice in Minneapolis and once. I think it was twice in Minneapolis that I recognized that, and I saw a white person with black children. And I was like, what in the world is going on? So I don't know if all our black children that have been missing are now in the Midwest, but that was a scary reality. Also, I'm now in Norfolk, Virginia, doing a documentary on sea level rise and the climate change and all these things. And it, but just a beautiful thing to see our people, but it's always interesting to hear the same story and the same dynamics in different cities and different places about what is going on, just like what is going on with us. So it's always interesting, and it's always, you know, it's always something. It's just amazing how the struggle of our people is the same everywhere you go. And the gentrification and the displacement of our community is the same everywhere you go. And it's always beautiful when you can go to a neighborhood or a new city and you always find the black bookstore or the conscious brothers and sisters and have powerful conversations with them. So it's been a lot going on, and we got a lot more going on. But I want to turn it back over to you, Dr. Ava, so we can get into this wonderful conversation, because we know Tuesday night we had this bomb guest, just excellent, and I'm not gonna shout out her universe. I'm gonna let you do that because I gotta steal with my university.
Oh, you're giving me everything, okay?
No, we giving you everything.
I'm gonna let Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad, who hosted that awesome episode,
she'll give that one
a time for justice. Yes, and actually,
we'll let her
each
have
and
that.
Every yes, sir. But each and every single episode of A Time for Justice is brain exploding. But I took particular joy as well as pride in the special guest that Sister Pamela had on this past Tuesday, my daughter Sherelle. Yes, Sherelle Muhammad. And she is president of the Juvenile Justice Advocates at Howard University. Very active group of young people who actually are making a change in the way this system is working against our youth. And we all know that this is Sister Attorney Pamela's life calling. I mean, she is immersed in making sure we have justice for our families and particularly for our children. And we have been blessed to know Sister Pamela, and she has shared with us some of her cases, some of her experiences. That's our future, our youth and
right.
our children and our babies. They are our future. Without them, everything we're doing is for naught. And so at this point in time, I do want to bring on Sister Attorney Pamela, maybe she'll bless us with a little reference to Tuesday, and then to talk about some of the latest developments on the legal scene that we're coming up against during this, quote, pandemic. With no further ado, let me bring on my dear Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Pamela.
Walaikum salam, Sister Dr. Ava Muhammad and Brother Terrence Muhammad. Assalamu alaikum to you, sir. All praises are due to Allah. I just was listening, and I'm so thankful to for you giving me that opportunity to have the show on the Elevated Places Network, and I'm so thankful to Allah for your kind words regarding enjoying the program. And, yes, ma'am, we did have the pleasure of having our sister, Sherelle Muhammad. As you said, Sister Dr. Ava, she's your daughter, and she's the president of the Juvenile Justice Advocates at Howard University. And it was such a wonderful experience because, as you say, we like to talk to legal minds, and so she's a legal mind in training. And she definitely is wise because they know about the youth that they see on, you know, in the environment, on the streets, because it's not so long ago that they were, you know, 16, 17, 18. So she was able to talk with other attorneys who specialize in one brother, Deshaun Muhammad out of Memphis, Tennessee. He is a primary juvenile practitioner, wonderful brother, as you're saying, Brother Terrence, because as you see those juvenile issues, like you saw those children being held by this Caucasian woman, you know, probably some foster situation. This brother, Brother Deshaun, he works in those areas with the youth, so he was able to speak with Sister Sherelle as well as our brother Athil Muhammad, who does a lot of criminal law. And, of course, a lot of times our children, you know, they're young. You know, once you get to be 19, 20, 21, you may have a criminal case, and they'll treat you like an adult, but we know that these are still our babies, our youth. So it was such a joy to have Sister Sherelle on. I know one of the stats that everybody just it blew their mind is when she was explaining to us how there's such a disproportionate amount of black youth who are sent to adult jails. And that's something very, you know, shocking. And so she was just brilliant. Sister Dr. Ava, I encourage everybody to listen to the archive because we just enjoyed the information that she brought us and the determination. So we pray for her to be that great lawyer and open up a college. That's what she wants. She says she wants to open up her own college.
Yes,
so.
Ma'am.
Yeah, that was beautiful.
Praise.
And you know, yes, ma'am, I agree. All praise are due to Allah. And as you said, Brother Terrence, about the babies, the babies, the two black children that you saw with the white lady, it reminds us of what happened with the legal kidnapping of the American Idol star that a lot of people probably saw on social media a couple of weeks ago, where her baby was, like, ripped from her arms. She was breastfeeding this baby, and you saw these police, you saw all these folks. It was like an ambush. And oftentimes this is how it begins. This is how those children are taken from their parents. So I thought it was very interesting. And so, you know, one other thing, Sister Ava, I wanted to discuss is this issue about the April 23rd, what they're calling the approval of the vaccine by the FDA. I'm sorry, the Pfizer vaccine. And I was reading, and you know, I was reading in the Children's Defense, the actual organization by Mr. Kennedy, and there's an article that they really raised some very important information that the listeners, we have to listen to. They did an article dated, I believe it's a couple of days ago, but the article is called Two Things Mainstream Media Didn't Tell You About the FDA's Approval of the Pfizer Vaccine. And I think it's very important, the points that they raise, because they're bringing out this point about how there was an emergency use authorization of a bio-N vaccine. And this is what we were all familiar with. Brother Nabat, in an article, he said Pfizer applied for the approval November the 20th. And this approval, this emergency use authorization, was given to them, I believe it's 12/11? But this event that occurred on 2020, 12/11 of 2020, So now here we are 8 months later, and we get the news that the FDA has approved the vaccine. But when you read the article and you actually read the FDA's decree, they approved a vaccine called a Comirnaty vaccine. And the BioNTech vaccine that was given emergency use authorization still has emergency use authorization. And so as this article that Mr. Kennedy, they bring out, they're saying that, so the vaccine is still unlicensed, but in a footnote, the FDA is trying to say that the vaccine that they licensed on August the 23rd can be used interchangeably with the vaccine that is still unlicensed because it's still under emergency use authorization. And so they raised the issue that that's very troubling because now you got a vaccine called Comirnaty. Now, there are people that are trying to say that they're the same, but in the footnote from the FDA, they say it has the same formulation, but and it could be used interchangeably, but they're also saying that the products are still legally distinct, meaning that one of them is still an emergency use authorization, and this is the one I think where the bears data is still being that we know with all the side effects. And so, you know, how can you now talk about this, you know, this other product? Where did this come from? And so Mr. Kennedy and their article, they're just really kind of questioning that. They bring out the fact that they're saying that in the FDA's letter, where they acknowledge that there are insufficient stocks of this newly licensed Comirnaty vaccine. But there's a lot of the one that is still under the emergency use authorization that we know as the BioNTech COVID vaccine. So now they're saying that you can use these old ones as if they're the same licensed ones. You know, the new license one. So there's a lot that is being discussed, and they're saying, okay, so if the emergency use authorization is still in effect, which this is what the FDA's letter said, because the last time they issued this emergency use letter, they kept renewing it. They renewed it August 12th, and then on August 23rd, they renewed it again for that same vaccine that we've been knowing about, you know, the BioNTech. So so you got two. Now one of them they're saying is licensed, but you're going to use the one that's not licensed interchangeably. So the question is really what's going on, because you still have an emergency use authorized drug that's going to be widely disseminated as if it's FDA approved. That's what their article is bringing up. And they bring up the question, and I'm just going to end it with this, but they're saying that, you know, there's some cynical scheme. They're saying, given this background, the FDA's acknowledgement approval letter that there are insufficient stocks of the licensed Comirnaty, but an abundant supply of the EUA, emergency use authorized Pfizer BioNTech jab, they say it exposes the approval as a cynical scheme to encourage businesses and schools to impose illegal jab mandates. And I looked up the word cynical because I wasn't sure what it meant, but they're saying that cynicism is when you're concerned only with one's own interests and typically disregarding the accepted or appropriate standards in order to achieve the outcome. And so that's what they've raised this issue. So it's going to be interesting to see how this is raised and made known to the American public as to what's going on. So we need to really look into what actually happened on August the 23rd. Was there, you know, what was really done? That, again, this article was Robert F. Kennedy Jr. and Merle Nass, M.D. That's who were the writers, as well as the actual August 23rd FDA letter. So that's what I wanted to, you know, kind of raise in terms of some conversation, Sister Ava.
Yes, ma'am. And
yes,
I think,
ma'am,
as you said, the bottom line is, and, you know, we don't believe in coincidences when we have an omnipresent God. Nothing just happens. And it is not a coincidence that this fake approval, because right underneath it we see that what you just laid it out, that the vaccine that has been deployed remains under emergency use authorization. And
right.
Is that because the FDA doesn't want responsibility for all of the deaths and adverse effects of this vaccine thus far? Now we're up to an acknowledged, as we have in this week's final call, the government is acknowledging 13,088 deaths directly attributable to these vaccines. And so at some point in time, there's going to be an overwhelming level of liability for this, even though the U.S. Congress put a shield of protection around these pharmaceutical companies. I shouldn't say, I'll put it like this. I don't know the means, but I do know that justice is coming, that all will be held accountable who had a part in this. But this is aimed at the children, and this came down just in time for school to start. All of these colleges now imposing vaccine mandates. And so the next thing you're going to have is children under the age of 12 are next up to be the victims of these death shots, as they are called by Dr. Vladimir Zelenko. I just want to mention Dr. Zelenko briefly. When you go into this week's final call, into our COVID section headed Don't Let Them Vaccinate You, Dr. Zelenko is an Orthodox Jew who has a family practice in New York. And very early in the pandemic, he developed a successful treatment protocol for his patients that suffer from COVID-19. And by the end of March of 2020, right after the official arrival of COVID-19, he and his team of doctors had administered that treatment to 2,000 patients. All of them recovered except for two fatalities, and those were high-risk patients. And he has an outpatient protocol that we have outlined. We have it in the final call. That's $20 per patient. Everything is being suppressed, and the U.S. population is being forced to take a vaccine that is not only harmful, but is admittedly ineffective. But I'm not going to go too much into that, because we have a medical doctor coming on the program, our young sisters coming on to discuss the experience of being in Cuba and getting her medical degree, but to give us some insight as to what is happening there. And, of course, we know that the minister called for in the criterion the lifting of the embargo against Cuba. But this, Dr. Zelenko, I want you to read. This is such a profound article because he gave a testimony in Israel to the rabbinic court regarding the COVID-19 vaccine. And he accused the Israeli government of being complicit in genocide. He said, first of all, this was genocide against the elderly, all of these elderly people who have died. And now what brought him out full blast is that now this is being aimed at the children. And he said of those behind the vaccine, and I quote, these people are no different than Pharaoh. They think they're God. And you're going to bow down to them? And he said, I'm seeing fear drive people to do things that are completely irrational, do not make sense, and they sacrifice their own children. And this is what the minister has been hammering home, that we have to let go of fear. And if you want your immune system compromised, allow yourself to fall victim to this propaganda campaign of fear that is intended to drive everyone to take this vaccine. But I really appreciate that, Sister Attorney Pamela. And with that, I'm going to turn the microphone back over to my co-host, Brother Terrence Muhammad, to get us into the center of our program and bring on our special guest. Brother Terrence?
Yes, ma'am. But before we do that, we do have something to talk about for tomorrow night, don't we, Dr. Ava?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir. Okay, let me pull up the flyer. Yeah, this is big. Our study group. Yes. National, that's right. This is a national self-improvement class. And, of course, you know, Friday night is the night that we gather to study the revelatory course, the path to resurrection given by God to the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, entitled Self-Improvement, the Basis for Community Development. And since the early stages of the pandemic, I want to give a shout-out to Brother Troy, 5X, Brother Bobby, Muhammad, and some of our other technical whizzes who put together a phenomenal Zoom virtual study group, and we break up into our circles in the chat rooms. It's a beautiful thing. Well, tomorrow night we're going to have a special presentation. We're going to resume our normal study next week, but tomorrow night we have a special presentation entitled COVID-19, Practical Steps for Self-Care, What You Can Do to Protect Yourself. Because remember, this night is to study self, self-examination, self-analysis, self-correction. That is a spiritual, mental, and physical experience that we have. And we have a responsibility during this pandemic to engage in some very real things on a daily basis and to be acutely aware of our own health, our own body, so that we can protect ourselves. And so tomorrow night, we have an array of brilliant health professionals, doctors. We have Dr. Sophia Shabazz, Dr. Velva Bowles, Dr. Akili Muhammad, and Dr. Darnita Muhammad, to give us some of the approaches that we can take to pushing back and making sure we come through this pandemic. And then we will also hear from our sister Anissa Muhammad, who is coordinating and assisting the Executive Council in the structuring and development of a full-fledged ministry of health. She has her master's degree in public health administration. She's out of Los Angeles, Moss number 27. This is going to be off the chain. And so look for the flyer. We've been posting it all over social media. I think we sent out an email blast through the National Center. If it hasn't gone out, it will be out this evening. And the Zoom ID is on the flyer. So please make sure you attend. It's tomorrow night, 7:30 Central Time, 8:30 Eastern Time.
Well.
Yes, sir.
Yes, ma'am. So that's going to be very, very powerful and very much so needed.
Yes,
and we want to make sure that everybody is in lined up and synced in. And be very clear. You know, when you ask what is the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan doing, he is delivering a clear message. That is his job. That is his responsibility. And he is delivering a clear message, and not only is he delivering a clear message, but those that follow in his footsteps and through his guidance are also offering this not just to us, we call the registered members of the Nation of Islam. This is to the whole of humanity and our community, particularly our Black community, are suffering and hit the worst. But we're offering this guidance and this information for everybody. So make sure that you spread the word about this tomorrow and have as many people as you can tune in. So everybody that's coming to you asking questions, want to know what's going on, what is y'all position, what do you think, of course, first give them, take them to the criterion by the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, and then you got the final call newspaper. But tomorrow night is going to be a special self-improvement study course that you do not want to miss. So,
yes, can save your
you
life.
Know, it's going to be a wonderful time, Dr. Ava. It's going to be an excellent and
yes.
wonderful time. So,
yes.
going
People
into
been
our
wondering
special...
what should they
mm-hmm.
do? yeah.
yeah, they have.
No, they've
they
been
have.
Wondering what should they do or can they do at home, because they're saying, well, you all say don't take the vaccine, so what should I do?
Right.
Because unvaccinated doesn't mean unprotected by any stretch.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And there are things we can do to really boost that immune system and protect us and get us through this. But back to you, Dr. Terrence. Just wanted to add that.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Well, right now, you know, we're always blessed to be on this show and have amazing and wonderful guests. And it's always, you know, I have this thing, and I tell everybody on social media, my squad, you know, people are in my squad. And when I say that, I actually know these people. And I'm always, and I'm thankful for the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan, that we are taught to not to be envious and jealous, but we want to love and honor and showcase those brothers and sisters that are doing excellent and marvelous work. And so I'm just happy to be able to say these people are part of my squad. And not only to know her mother and, you know, to have worked with her mother in this mission, but to see herself, the sister that we bring in on, grow up in this mission and being working in this mission. And, you know, sometimes mm-hmm. I want to just, I ain't need no bio. I'm going to just tell, I know you. I could just talk about you. I don't need no bio. But when I got the bio, Dr. Ava, I was reading. I was like, wow. I'm glad I got the bio because I didn't know as much as was going on. So let me just read this and as we bring our guests on so you can kind of know who she is. So our sister Nahira Muhammad, she was born and raised in the Nation of Islam. She grew up in Muhammad's Mosque number 12 in Philadelphia and became a registered member of the Nation of Islam at age 16 at Mosque number 55 in Memphis, Tennessee. And she's currently active in Muhammad's Mosque number 1 in Detroit. She graduated. Here's the part. She graduated high school at the age of 14, Dr. Ava, at 14.
Come on.
She received her B.S. in biology, magna cum laude, from Lemoyne College at 18 of age. So, you know, when I was just getting out of James B. Dudley High School, she was already graduating from college. So she was dust in my shoes in time period. She has always been a passionate youth leader in the Nation of Islam. It was actually through her affiliation with the NOI that provided her with the opportunity to go to Cuba to study medicine. As of July 2021, she successfully graduated with her medical degree, summa cum laude, from the Latin American School of Medicine in Havana, Cuba. So as we go back in April 2012, she collaborated with Student Government Association at Lemoyne Owen College to successfully secure the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan as the keynote speaker for their Diversity Leadership Conference. She's facilitated the program as the co-MC, and the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan spoke to the packed house, and I could bear witness because I was there, and that was right before he had gone to, he was in Alabama, and then he went to Nashville, then he came to Lemoyne, then he went to Arkansas, and that was a very powerful and packed house. Then she says, since becoming a registered member of the Nation of Islam in Memphis, she has continued to find ways to give back to her community. She has led local youth group and successfully helped to increase the overall youth participation in Mosque 55. In addition to her other projects, Sister Naira led a national initiative called the Honorable Elijah Muhammad Said, whereby she coordinated youth in the Nation of Islam to read the books and articles of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. The objective was to catalog and compile specific subjects and sayings of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad. Excellent. She provides assistance to the National Secretary of the Nation of Islam, serving as a member of the sub-executive team since 2013. She has also been blessed to speak at her local mosque on various workshops, panels, local and national radio programs, and present on the National Secretary Conference calls. Additionally, she has completed several medical rotations, which is needed, medical rotations with physicians who specialize in internal medicine, family medicine, cardiology in the cities of Memphis, Philadelphia, New Rochelle, and Detroit. Our sister is a bilingual doctor and is currently applying to internal medicine residency programs with hopes of subsidizing in cardiology. In the near future, she looks forward to practicing in medically undeserved communities and continue to serve the Nation of Islam. She believes that youth involvement and leadership is paramount to the ultimate survival and prosperity of the Nation of Islam and Black Nation as a whole. Woo! Dr. Ava, that's I can't even call her youth anymore, but just knowing that she graduated 14 at the age that she had now 26 and have accomplished all that she's accomplished and is not stopping and is a registered active member of the Nation of Islam, I want to welcome our guest, our sister, Sister Dr. Naira Muhammad. Welcome to the show. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. Thank you so much for having me this evening.
Oh, we got hand claps in the background there, Dr. All right, hold on, y'all. Y'all didn't even notice that Elevated Places Network is now doing hand claps when our guests come on.
Well, let me say this.
I like it. Go ahead.
You and the sister, Dr. Naira, this is the first time in the history of Elevated Places that we have had the applause. Because this is the most impressive resume for someone so young, okay, that we had to bring out the, I was on here, I said, no, we got to applaud. We have to stand up and applaud my sister. Welcome, welcome, welcome.
That is
Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am.
No, no, no. Thank you for coming on this show. And, you know, we wanted to, and I didn't want so much time to go by. I saw the social media post that you had completed. But, you know, we were trying, and I was trying to figure out, Dr. Ava, where to start, where to go, because she has so many stories to talk about Cuba. But, you know, if we don't mind, Dr. Ava, I wanted to just kind of start with her journey. I mean, because one of the things sometimes, you know, we do stuff and we don't see ourselves the same way, just as I've honored you, Dr. Ava. You know, for you, you're just Dr. Ava. You've just been doing what you do. You've just been serving and working at the under the leadership of the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan. But then other people look at your accomplishment, what you do, it's like, wow, wow. And so she's kind of in that same vein where she's like, I'm just being me. But I really want her to talk about graduating at 14, graduating at 18, and then we can go into the Cuba experience, because I don't want to jump on that over those significant milestones that most of our young people today are not doing, that we're graduating from college at 18 years old and high school at 14. If she can just tell us about that and how did that happen, and then we can go and get into Cuba, if she doesn't mind.
Yes, sir. Well, firstly, I would like to say that I don't really have a mind-blowing answer to this, but I first have to thank my mother for blessing me to be very, how could I say it, determined at a very young age. I went to Muhammad's Islamic Academy, or MUI, in Philly, and that is the school that really helped me to move along in my studies and not hold me back. I skipped three grades in grade school. I don't remember exactly which ones it was, but I can't say exactly how it felt. I remember being in college with other people who were 4 years older than me, and I always kept it a secret. I never wanted anybody to know how old I was, because I didn't want to get treated different, or I didn't want people to point me out or things like that. But I was blessed to be very mature at a young age, so it didn't come out until the very end of my college career that I was only 18 years old when they were announcing me, because I got honored. But I can't do anything but thank my mother and thank these teachings for blessing me to develop in the way that I did, and thanking the teachers that I had back at the MUI in Philly for pushing me and not holding me back and, you know, just keeping me on that path of success at a very young age.
Okay. Well, thanks, Mother, Sister Naja, for that. And, you know, we're not going to let you give these, you know, that was a nice short and sweet answer. And that just speaks to the quality of what we put into our children. And that was a nice, sweet answer. But let's get now right into the meat, because you have so many stories about Cuba, because, you ain't going to get off the hook with short answers tonight, because we want to dig into this experience. How did it all come about that you went to Cuba, and what was your first, you know, what's that first year like, and that experience of finding out and going to Cuba for medical school?
Wow. Okay. So first, when people ask me that question, it's so many things that come to mind about my journey in Cuba. You know, I tell people all the time that I went to Cuba to attend medical school, but my journey in Cuba taught me so much more than just medicine. I first have to thank the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan for introducing the Cuba medical program to our nation. And I further have to thank Comandante en Jefe, or Commander-in-Chief Fidel Castro Ruz, for affording me the opportunity to study medicine free of charge in Cuba. I remember my mom telling me about going to Cuba for medical school, because I knew from a very young age that I wanted to be a doctor. Like a toddler, I was saying I wanted to be a doctor. And my mom mentioned the Cuba medical program to me in high school, and I'm like, no, I'm not really trying to go to Cuba, you know. So she kept mentioning it to me on several occasions, and, you know, the minister spoke about it. And it was then, I want to say my junior, senior year in college, when she finally, I was convinced to, you know, pursue this application of applying to, of going to Cuba. And I remember the whole application process actually goes through an organization called IFCO, Pastors for Peace in New York, a nonprofit organization. And I remember getting the call to get my interview for this full academic scholarship for medical school. And I wasn't really sure what to expect going over to Cuba. I was just prayerful. I knew Allah was with me. This is what I did. My mom was by my side. She motivated me, and I just, you know, stepped out on faith and went to Cuba by myself, knowing no Spanish, going to medical school in a whole nother language. But it was a very unique and rewarding experience. You know, when you think about this country 90 miles from the U.S. that has been under an embargo for over 60 years now, I believe 62 years now, and contrary to the propaganda that we get here, but being able to live and see the Cuban Revolution and live it with the Cuban people for 7 years, you know, it was mind-blowing, just understanding the Cuban struggle in addition to going to medical school in another language. It was a culture shock. I will say it was a culture shock. Like I said, all my classes were in Spanish, so I had to take Spanish classes for 6 months straight. When you first go to Cuba, it's like a preparatory year where you do 6 months straight of just Spanish classes. And I don't know. It was a culture shock. It was difficult, but I became fluent. I want to say I noticed I was fluent maybe about a year and a half in, and I don't know. I can't answer more specific questions because there's so many avenues I can go to talk about how the journey unfolded. But, yeah, let me know where you like me to go next, and I will keep expanding.
No,
so I'm not rambling.
No. And you're doing great, and I think one of the beautiful things that happened is that you, in your bio, it said that you're bilingual, and I don't know if people recognize that in your bio it said you're bilingual, but you went to Cuba not knowing how to speak that language.
Right.
And I'm just saying, how did you manage, you know, how did you manage going through that? Because, I'm going to ask you specific, because when you said it was a culture shock, how did you manage, you know, learning Spanish through your matriculation there at school, and then what was the cultural differences that you found or had to get adjusted to down in Cuba?
Okay. So like I said, the first year in Cuba, the first 6 months was strictly Spanish classes. So I was sitting in a classroom with students from all over the world who some spoke Arabic, some spoke Portuguese, some spoke French, you know. We're all in this classroom with this Cuban teacher who only speaks Spanish. She doesn't speak anybody else's language. She only speaks Spanish. And we all are here trying to learn Spanish. And so, you know, I think the best way that you can learn a language is being fully immersed in that environment, because when I'm outside the classroom and I got to find food, when I got to ask for food with no pork in it, because that was something that was very big. Everything in Cuba had pork in it. Even the bread came with bits of bacon on it, you know. So when you had to get around and figure out what to eat, when you had to get transport from point A to point B, when you had to get your clothes washed or even communicate with your professors, or moving on campus where I was in a room with a student from the Pacific Islands, where I was in a room with students from Africa, so from the Caribbean, from all these different places, and we don't necessarily speak the same language. And the one common language that we all spoke was Spanish. So it forced us to practice and really try and learn the language, because not only do we have to understand our classes, but we have to communicate with one another in our living arrangements in the bathroom. So, and of course, like I said, Cuba's not just any country. You know, a lot of us are used to going outside the country. We can click on our phones. We can still get internet. When I got to Cuba, I didn't have that option. There was no internet on cell phones in Cuba. It was pretty much like a prepaid phone. So you had to put minutes on your phone, and it was literally almost $2 a minute for me to call back home to here to the States. And the only Wi-Fi I had was when I went to the hotel to use it for $10 an hour. So
all of these things, exactly.
So talking about culture shock, I, you know, it was a beautiful experience. And looking back on it, being at the end of the journey, and as I neared the end of my journey, I looked back on it and I was very grateful for the experiences that I had in Cuba. But year one, I had a lot of breakdowns because I'm like, what the heck is going on? You know, when you're near toilet paper shortages and you have to bring baby wipes and you have to bring, you know, sanitary napkins, because these are things you don't know if you're going to see. You don't have a Walmart. You don't have a Walgreens. You don't have a CVS to run to your, you know, to run to these stores and just pick up the basic soap and lotion. So I had to literally travel to Cuba with 2 and 3 and 4 suitcases with all of the toiletries and some of the food that I needed. So in addition to trying to learn a new language, I was also dealing with these other obstacles and just learning how to live with less. And like I said, living with the Cuban people, and not only with the Cuban people, but learning how to live with others from all over the world, because my school, the Latin American School of Medicine, has students from over 100 different countries.
Now, may I ask you, too, now, were there any other Muslim students from the nation or anyone down there at all that you could relate to at all?
Yes, okay. Ma'am. When I went, there was, let me think. When my first year in Cuba, there was actually 4 other Nation of Islam students there, Sister Isan, Sister Rakaya, Sister Mariam, and Brother Shaquel. And there were also a lot of Muslims from Africa, from the Middle East. So there were other Muslims there, but, you know, there's still cultural differences, but it was really nice to have the Nation of Islam students there, though. We definitely tried our best to, you know, help each other out and look out for one another, even though we were in different years.
But you're all in shock, right? Right.
Yes, ma'am, exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly.
That just makes me have such respect. Mm. Go ahead, Brother Terrence.
No. I was over here just like, oh my God, I was getting sick. She said, no phone, no internet. And if anybody know me, I'm on social media. I'm like, oh, I'd have been passed out. And my whole work right now, I ain't even bring the laptop. Everything I'm doing is on my phone. I'm setting up calendars. I'm setting up interviews. I'm doing Zooms. I'm doing meetings all on my phone. So not to have a phone and conference calls and internet. That is, but the beauty of what she said is that, and I don't know if anybody heard, for me, I heard the teachings, is that we have to learn to speak the language well. And so everybody, regardless of where you came from, who you from, where you from, what you represent, you had to come and learn the language. And you had to learn the language to be able to have unity. And I heard you, like, just in the bathroom, just in our everyday living spaces, in our everyday living spaces, you're going to learn the language so we can communicate, so we can live together in peace.
Yeah.
Yes, and to live in peace and harmony. And if you don't learn that language, then you're not going to be able. And I'm just thinking about how the brothers go out in the community, and we have to learn the language of the community that we're going in so we can have peace. So it just is very, very interesting. Dr. Ava, I'm not going to take over too many of the questions. I have some more, but did you have anything else you wanted to follow up with?
I was going to ask about the pandemic, because I think you all were coming out of there by then, Sister Naira.
Yes, ma'am. It actually started, I want to say my last year, second semester before my last year. One of the things that Cuba is really big on, because Cuba also deals with a lot of tropical diseases, you know, such like dengue, things like that. And so one of the things Cuba implemented, they had the medical students participating in what is called community screening, where the medical students, professors, where they all go out into communities, and each student or group of students is responsible for a certain neighborhood, certain block, and we had to literally go door to door screening people, asking for symptoms. We had to ask if people have traveled. We had to ask if they've been in contact with people who have traveled. And that was a big part of our curriculum for a while to try and get things under control. And then Cuba also started their own vaccine campaign as they developed two vaccines themselves. And even dealing with, you know, a shortage of materials, I know at one point Cuba used uniform pants to make masks for a lot of the medical personnel who was going out into the streets and working in these COVID isolation centers. So that experience of the pandemic was also very interesting in Cuba as well.
Yes, ma'am.
Well, this is,
you can go ahead, brother.
No, I just wanted to also, I guess, now, I think more people, you know, because I know you have mentioned that you had so many different experiences. Are there any memorable moments that you want to share, any very significant moments, whether it be while you're in Cuba, whether it's at the medical school, whether you met anyone, you know, anything that stands out in the years that you was in Cuba? Or even just communicating with home.
Yes, sir. Actually, a few things come to mind. I know one of the most memorable moments that we had in 2016, in March of 2016, is when President Obama came to Cuba, which was the first time a U.S. president set foot in Cuba since, I believe it was 1928. And we, the U.S. medical students, got invited to actually be present during his speech as he addressed some of the Cuban the Cuban people. And while President Raul Castro was also present at the time, I got a chance to meet Jackie Robinson's wife, his daughter. They were also present while Obama was in Cuba speaking. So that was very memorable. Also, actually later that year in November of 2016 was the passing of Fidel Castro. And there was a nationwide memorial service they had for him. Honestly, being there, really, I'm speechless trying to describe the moment and how it felt, the energy of the Cuban people mourning his loss. And they literally had their, I remember being on campus, and this particular morning after, you know, they found out about his passing, there were about 20 yellow school buses prepared to take all of the medical students down to the Revolution Plaza, which is one of the famous monuments in Cuba where Fidel Castro spoke. And we all marched down, you know, they drove us down to this Revolution Plaza, and we all marched up to the plaza to celebrate his life. And you saw all of the Cuban people mourning. And then even that evening, there were a lot of different leaders, Latin American leaders, African leaders who were present to speak about Fidel Castro. So that was a very, very beautiful and memorable moment. As well as the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan visiting, I believe that was in 2019, if I'm not mistaken. The minister came to visit. I believe he was there for about a week. And I got a chance to spend time with him, and while he visited like the music school in Cuba, and I can't remember all of the places he visited, but I was blessed to go to dinner with him and visit the music school with him. The students at the music school, they did different performances for him, so that was
that's
also
awesome.
A very, very memorable moment. Yeah, it's so many. You know, I met so many people being in Cuba, you know, so many congressmen and senators who came down who were just so interested in these U.S. students who were studying in Cuba. So those are a few, just to, you know, not to keep rambling on, but...
I don't think you just rambled when you just said you went through the services.
Right.
I mean, you, that you, Obama, you know, came down. And then you want to close it out. No, just a few. The minister came down. He was meeting, you know, we was meeting with the minister. And, you know, yeah, hanging out with the minister. I mean, you know, in Cuba. I just want you to understand that we listening and the callers and everybody that are listening are really, like, hanging on to every word that you're saying to talk about the experience, because no, some of us have traveled to Cuba and spent a couple of days, a couple of weeks, and come home, but you have spent years there in Cuba, which is very fascinating. I want to come back to Cuba, but I wanted to jump because it's very interesting. When I was looking at the bio, I work with a lot of people in the medical institution, and one of my close friends used to be the head of internal medicine at one of the hospitals that I work with. Where do you see yourself? Because I'm seeing, you know, the internal medicine residency and going in cardiology. Where do you want to take your skills? Where do you want to actually apply? Where do you want to end up with your medical journey now that you're on it?
Well, I am currently in the process of applying to residency programs. And so as far as my residency, that is pretty much where I just get more training to specialize. And I'm pretty open with respect to that. I'm applying more so to East Coast, DMV area, Philly. I'm also possibly looking at Houston. These are places that I'm just looking at as far as residency is concerned. However, my ultimate goal is to – I can't say where I'm going to settle down, but I definitely want to be giving back to the medically underserved community, and especially speaking to the skill set that I've acquired being bilingual now. I definitely look forward to bridging the gap between the Black community and the Latino community, and just expanding access to healthcare in these underrepresented areas. So I can't say for certain where I will be, but I know somewhere where I need it for sure. But as far as residency, if you have any connections in any hospitals, you know, East Coast, Philly, DMV, Houston, I'm open. I would, that would be nice if you put in a good word for me.
Well, we
wow.
may have to.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we may have to make that. Yeah. I do know the chief medical examiner in D.C., Dr. Roger Mitchell, good friend. So we're going to have to figure out. Then we got a lot of doctors. And Sister Jessica in Chicago and Sister Sophia in Philadelphia. I mean, there's doctors in Aquila. And shoot, they're coming on the show tomorrow night with self-improvement. So I know there's some places that we can definitely aspire to help you get to that next level of where you want to go. I think before we, you know, go to the next phase, I just need to ask a little bit more about Cuba, because we haven't asked this question. How was it representing the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan in Cuba? Because me knowing you personally, I know you never shied and moved away from your representation of the Nation of Islam and Minister Farrakhan. How was that, even though there were other members there? How did that translate in your years there?
I guess I would – how did it translate? Like you said, since the nation and these teachings are something that's innately a part of me, I definitely think it has, you know, it has protected me throughout my journey, and it has helped me build – friendships with a lot of other students from different countries. And some of the students, you know, some students from Middle East, I had a friend from Palestine who was very aware of who the minister was. And he was like, oh, Minister Farrakhan? You know, you hear people sometimes, you know, saying like, oh, I can't really say too much amongst the Cuban people, but I know just as far as having the teachings with me and that being my foundation has definitely helped me get more out of this experience and just, like I said, acquire the friendships that I've acquired. And, of course, just having that connection with the other Nation of Islam students who were there at the time. And like I said, when the minister was there, just having that experience with him and seeing just the level of respect he had with the Cuban people and the different Cuban leaders, and even at the music school, and he even came to the medical school and sat down and spoke to some of the medical students who were there. And, you know, one thing I will say is my classmates always put me on the spot just saying how, you know, like Nahir is just the most disciplined. She's so poised. She's so, you know, they would talk about me in such a high regard that I didn't even know I was necessarily exuding these characteristics, but my classmates, they saw it. They would, you know, shout me out and say these things about me. So I definitely think that the teachings and being a student had the Honorable Minister Louis Farrakhan and Honorable Elijah Muhammad has definitely helped me be a good representation of the nation and these teachings abroad.
Excellent.
So
that's awesome. Yes, sir. We've got some people here on the phone, and we're going to start with some of our loyal regular listeners, and we're going to Brother Daryl. Assalamu alaikum, Brother Daryl.
Wa alaikum salam.
All right.
My beloved. Praise be to Allah.
All right.
I had to add on to that because it is a blessing to our sister Nahir, right?
Yeah.
May Allah continue to bless you, sister. I am so happy and joyful because the Most Honorable Elijah Muhammad has always spoken that we need our own hospital. So by your being there and learning, and then I heard the minister before he started allowing the believers to go over, he wanted to check when Fidel Castro told him he wanted to help the nation, but only if they're going to come back and use the knowledge here for our people. So all praises due to Allah. My question to you, I know the medical field never stopped. What field are you in now? Are you going into surgeon or this? You know, what field that you're going to go in and being in the medical field?
Yes, sir. I'm actually going into internal medicine, inshallah, and I have hopes of subspecializing in cardiology. So I look forward to going into primary care, but also doing cardiology as well.
Praise be to Allah, because I am so happy anyway, because my mother, may Allah, and our family on the line put a prayer for my mother. She was doing well with the COVID. She did 2 weeks, and she was doing fine. Was getting ready to find a facility for her to get her strength back up. And they say, you know, she went down to zero. You know, we wonder what happened. Then they said she had internal bleeding. So we did a fast, and our sister in Detroit, she came in because she's like, they say, chapel for the nation, and she went in and did a prayer for my mother. They said right now that the bleeding has stopped, and not only for my mother, for all of the believers, and plus our brothers in Miami. I don't know if you all know, we said they said there's 5 brothers on a ventilator in Miami. So I am so happy that now, that we are now got our family that's coming into medical, and so we can hurry up and speedily get that 500-room hospital that the Honorable Elijah Muhammad spoke on.
Yeah.
And the other question was to for last Thursday, I noticed it was a replay, and I thought when you mentioned my name, I'll get ready to say something. Then I heard myself talking before I said something. So I said, wait a minute, what's going on? Did I, you know, so I figured it out. But anyway, they passed, someone hit the lotto. Go show how this white man is working for the $1 million for to take the Jim Jones Kool-Aid in the needle. So now our people are running there, pulling their sleeves up to take this shot out of fear. So maybe the listeners that come on and you could kind of elaborate on that, about our people got to come out of this fear. And plus, to Sister Pamela, attorney, what if you can announce that, is it set up where you could get on her show like you do your show without no code or just a straight number? And I would like to know that so I can get to that as well and be a part of that. And may Allah continue to bless you, beloved sister, and your family. And we just keep our faith and prayer in Allah to watch over our family and people that are taking this shot and those that are not. May Allah continue to bless you in the nation of Islam. As-salamu alaykum.
Wa alaykum salam. Brother Darrell, I just want to get some clarity about your mother. Now, you're saying she's improving. You said the bleeding, the internal bleeding has stopped.
I didn't want to take up the whole show, but my wife do have your number, and we can kind of elaborate on a little bit more. Because my sister, my baby sister, she's so upset because she said my mother, she put her on. She was talking to us like I'm talking to you, and she did a Zoom and had all of her children on there. My mother sounded so strong. And she said, I'm just ready to get out of here, just like that. I'm ready to come and get the therapy and come home. And the next day, my sister called me crying. They said, Mama is internal bleeding, and we want to know what happened. She said she was doing fine. Yesterday, I went to another facility to pick out for her to go get her therapy. And now my mother is bleeding. And they say, well, we can't do surgery because her age, she's 88, because she has a stent, and she has a that's why I'm so glad the sister's into the cardiac. But she has a pacemaker, and they say we don't want to take a chance of doing surgery. And so I said, praise due to Allah, maybe it's a blessing that they're not doing surgery. And they say right now she's stable, okay. But my mother, she has lost 25 pounds. And we are wondering what happened. So my sister is trying to get to the top of what's going on, and it said because she didn't want to go in the hospital. We don't trust the hospital, but we have to do
exactly.
What we have to do sometimes. Yeah. Like the minister said, she said she wasn't eating, and I forgot. She did throw up blood, a pint of blood. They gave her blood that was in the first hospital, but they wasn't doing well with her. So she got sick again, so we took her to Belmont on 13 and Woodward in Detroit, and that's a better hospital. And that's when they said she was doing fine. Then they came to know she had internal bleeding. So it's just, I don't know. We just praying the Master Prophet Muhammad that right now they say she's stable, but they got a tube down her throat. They didn't want to do no incision on her, and they giving her liquid of food to try to get her strength back up. So I just pray that, we can put prayers in for my mother and also our brothers that's on the ventilator in Miami. So it's a lot going on. So this is where our faith come in. My mother said, remember I told you last week or the week before, they're trying to force her to take a shot. She said, I'm not taking no shot. And they said she had COVID twice. She said, that's not true. I'm not saying now, no, I'm not crazy, but you're not going to give me the shot. And next thing you know, she's where she at now. So I pray Allah with our prayers and everything that Allah bring her to the rest of our brother. Because our family is going through a lot in our brother, it is what it is. We just, whatever Allah's will, we just put in, and I know Allah got us. So I appreciate your concerns, Sister Dr. Ava, and my wife, to kind of send some emails to you and kind of keep you posted what's going on.
Okay. Yes, sir. I appreciate it. Thank you so much, Brother Darrell, and your family. You and your family are in our prayers. We all have to stick together. In our faith now. So rough time, but it's almost over. It's almost over.
Yes, ma'am.
We are the winner. Yes, sir. Okay, we're going to go to Sister Ula. Hope she's still hanging in there. Let's see. Uh-oh.
She's there. She's definitely there.
Gotta watch it because she will go out on you, go to sleep on you. I just woke up about 10 minutes ago.
Yes, ma'am. I just woke up about 10 minutes ago. Thank you.
I know Sister Naira is saying, what type of program is this? Okay.
So, sister, come in snoring, know that's right. But I just want to thank you, Sister Ava, for the Blog Talk Radio show, because it gives us a chance to express ourselves. And my goal
is
to get up tomorrow morning, and I pray that everyone that's listening bring the 5 o'clock prayer and pray for the lives of our brothers and sisters who are in these hospitals under COVID-19 restrictions. Because, you know, you can't go in the hospital to see after them. And so our prayers are with them. I pray that we use the teachings of the Honorable Louis Farrakhan, July the 4th message, to protect ourselves in this day and time. I was going to say that we have here in Detroit, we have been blessed that other cities do not have the type of mosque that we're blessed to have. We have a beautiful mosque here.
Yes, ma'am.
And a lot of believers don't have that. Sister Ava, what do you think about what the minister said? This is the last question I'm going to have. What do you think about what he said about there are 14 different ways to deal with this pandemic? Is that what he said? Could you enlighten me on that, please?
Well, yes, that's one of the focal points tomorrow evening when we host a special presentation during the self-improvement study course on care of self, self-care. But he said in the criterion that there are 14 therapies and treatments in the world that we can use to fight the virus. Those were his words. Mm. And
yes,
one of those therapies is the medicine known as ivermectin.
Mm-hmm.
Now, many of the believers have started to, as we have pressed this in the Final Call newspaper for quite some time, we talked about it during Savior's Day, very effective in the treatment of the COVID virus as a prophylactic, as a preventive, and also if the disease is in progress. There were some other ones that were looked into, but that one in particular, with its record, the nation decided to endorse publicly that particular approach. And then as you recall, and we have Sister Dr. Naira on, but you recall he wanted the U.S. government to lift the embargo on Cuba because at the time Cuba was experiencing one of the best success rates in dealing with the virus despite all of the wickedness of the United States government and you know, they've deprived this island nation of the ability to import and export for, I mean, it seems like forever. I mean, I think by the first time I ever saw a TV as a toddler, Castro was on it. Okay, he's been on it.
Mm-hmm.
And when sisters talked about the loss of Fidel Castro, what it meant to the Cuban people, I could envision that. Because he was as much a part of the psyche of and the hearts and souls of the people the way Minister Farrakhan is for Black people. It's like, you know, you can't imagine life without him, you know. But back to your point, yeah, that's what he said, and so he said that at the same time that he condemned the vaccine as death, and remember. The minister said this while the vaccine was in development, the mRNA vaccine in particular. It wasn't even out yet. And he warned us. And now the vaccine is out. It is not only harmful, it's deadly. It has killed anywhere from 13 to 50,000 people, along with a number of adverse effects. So make sure you tune in tomorrow evening on Zoom.
I tried to tune in a couple of weeks ago, and she told me to call back because she couldn't put me in. I called back.
Someone told you to call back?
Yeah, she told me that she couldn't pull me into the, 8 or 10 people. I don't want y'all to call it, but she couldn't pull me in. There was no picture of me or anything, so she told me to go back in and try to come through. So I did what she told me to do, and I wasn't able to get in.
Okay, I'm going to call you offline because I'm not sure what happened. But we don't want you to miss it. But tomorrow is a webinar. We're not doing the circles. We're going to be watching something. There's just a general Zoom ID number that's on the flyer, and you just go on Zoom and type in that number, and you'll come right in. Okay. But we'll talk extensively. Oh, love you more. Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much. All right.
Thank you.
Assalamu alaikum.
Wa alaikum salam.
Okay, and we also have on the line, we have Dr. Ridgely is on the line. Dr. Ridgely Muhammad, who's been writing some phenomenal articles for the COVID section. Assalamu alaikum, Dr. Ridgely.
Wa alaikum salam. Can you hear me?
Yes, sir.
Yes, sir. Okay. Great show. And I just wanted to ask Dr. Nairi two questions. I heard her talk about the Cubans developing a vaccine. Did they develop a vaccine?
Yes.
And who is using the vaccine around the world?
Okay. Yes, sir. Dr. Nairi. Yes, Cuba did develop two vaccines, Soberana 02 and Abdala. I can't speak to everybody that is using it. I know I heard there were a couple countries in Africa, I think Brazil, and I know Cuba has been vaccinating all of their population, starting with the healthcare workers and the vulnerable population, starting with the seniors and working their way down. I would have to get more information with respect to every single country that is using Cuba's vaccine, but they are definitely using it right now. I believe they started back in August, probably back in March or April, I believe they started their vaccine campaign over in Cuba.
Okay, thank you so much, because I haven't seen anything about the vaccine and its effectiveness and, you know, how the people doing, et cetera. I think that Minister Ava and the minister, you know, that he talked about that, and we need to find out as much as we can, because this government ain't about to allow people to use anything good.
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. They probably are trying very hard to not put a lot of sets and things or the developments behind the Cuba vaccine. They're probably trying to stop a lot of us from knowing what's happening with that. But if I get a good source for it, I could definitely shoot it out to Brother Terrence, and he can possibly get it to you all.
Okay, that would be great. Send it to Minister Ava, and the Minister Ava, send it to me so I can do an article on it before you do an article on it. No, I'm just kidding. Do the article on it.
You're going to do an article. but you know, I lost it. But it looked like I had just pulled up this graph on my phone that I use, on coronavirus, the global one. And in Cuba, according to this, is only had 96 deaths.
And total?
That's what this is saying. I'm trying to.
Mm.
Okay, this is as of Wednesday. Okay. New.
Well, they definitely don't have a high death rate over there from COVID. I can't. Let me see if I can pull up over here the exact number.
I know it's yeah, very low in comparison to just about every. And really, it's the United States that is really has the weight of the cases and the deaths, because I think the second after the United States is India, and they are neck and neck in cases throughout the pandemic. I think it's you know, it's 30 million plus cases, not deaths, but cases. But when you consider the fact that India is three times the population of the United States and has about a million fewer cases, because India has over a billion people. They're right behind China in population.
Right.
But, you know, to the minister's point, you know, during a criterion, this is affecting the whole earth, but what's in Allah's crosshairs, his target, is the United States of America. And it seems to be the only country that can't shake it, you know, get it under control, but you're supposed to be the most advanced.
Mm-hmm.
But we need to look into that. And Dr. Naira, if you can keep us posted, give whatever information you can give us on Cuba's vaccines. I remember hearing something about nasal interferon in Cuba. Are you familiar with that at all? Okay.
I have heard of it.
Yes, ma'am.
And I believe they're using it to treat patients when they're in the COVID isolation centers. I haven't been firsthand and using it myself because I haven't been in the actual COVID isolation centers, but I have talked to people who have been treated in the centers with it.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Thank you so much for that.
We have a great source of information Dr. Ava.
We sure do. This is a blessing on so many levels. Praise be to Allah.
The other thing I want to say, I guess it's not a question, it's just a statement, that I really wish that we had some black hospitals that she could do her residency in. But now we only have one left, which is Howard, because the one in Houston is down. And my article, I had said there were two. We had 200 in 1923. Now we only have one. So hopefully by the time she finishes her residency, we'll have at least one where she can come. That's all I wanted to say.
Yeah.
As-salamu alaykum.
Yes, sir.
Praise be to Allah. And unfortunately, from what my daughter is saying at Howard University, we're just sort of the face of that one now. It's not really black in terms of who's calling the shots, as it were. So we're gonna move on to Sister Marguerite. She has a comment. If I can get her mic open here, okay. Assalamu alaikum, Sister Marguerite.
Wa alaikum salam, Dr. Ava and Dr. Ridgely and our young sister. I'm so happy to hear what you're doing. I had an experience earlier that kind of ties into what you're talking about and something that Brother Terrence mentioned. I had been in foster care for about 12 years, and I ended up fighting, you know, cats and dogs to get my own grandchildren out of foster care into my care. My daughter-in-law took her three-month-old to the hospital a couple of weeks ago. He was having a hard time breathing. And she didn't want to take a chance. You know, with 3 months old, you don't want to take a chance with them. So she took him into the hospital.
Yes, ma'am.
And as they were treating him, one of the nurse came in and said, you know, I smell weed on you. Have you been smoking weed? And she says, no. She says, well, has your husband been smoking weed? Because I get really nauseous when I smell weed. And my daughter-in-law says, no. She said, my daughter-in-law told her, I'm an ICU nurse. I don't smoke. And neither is my baby exposed. And so that made her back up, and she changed her tune when she found out she was the mother is a nurse. But this working in foster care, this has showed me why we need our own hospitals, because they take these babies from their mothers, and they use the doctors and nurses in the hospital to do this. So, and Brother Terrence asked about, well, why do you see white people with black babies? Because it is a source of income. I read a brother put out a thing that slavery has not been abolished. It's been polished. So any way that they can make money off of black bodies, they're going to make money. And as I studied, as they say, follow the money in foster care, you know, they've taken the industry out. They've taken the factories out. So all these middle management, you know, upper middle class jobs are gone. So they have reinvented, using our children, a way to give these people income. And the money that they make off of children is insane. And when I had a Native American child who was therapeutic. Therapeutic children, they pay you $3,000 a month for one child. So if they can get them on medication, that means their income goes through the roof. My question to the social worker was, why don't you give this money to the parents to help the parents get themselves stabilized and make their children back? And they looked at me like I was crazy.
Unbelievable.
So it is about income. Our children provide these broke-ass white folks with an income.
My God.
And you remember, Sister Ava, when those children is like four siblings, the foster parents ran off the cliff in California.
Oh, yeah, and killed those children. Yes.
Those siblings,
right.
Those two women, and I think Sister Pamela knows this. I think they took them out of Texas from relatives who wanted those children.
Right.
But the
yes,
court
ma'am.
Is convinced
right.
They're all criminal.
Yes, ma'am. You're right. Yes, ma'am. Sister Marguerite.
Yes, ma'am.
My God.
And you know, Sister Ava, as she's speaking, it reminds me of how Brother Reuben used to explain to us about in Australia when this had been done
with the
forgotten children,
yes.
Right, with the Aboriginals. And so genocide definitely plays a role as well. They you know, I think they want to destroy
they're also predators. And
yes, ma'am.
They also
yeah.
practice pedophilia. Those women that drove those children
That's
to
right.
their death, they were lesbians.
That's yeah.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Don't forget that either.
Yeah.
Tortured the children.
And see,
children
it goes
starved.
Yeah, it goes
starved
back to that
them.
Program. Mm-hmm. But in other words, it's the same thing as, to Sister's point, as slavery. And remember, the 13th Amendment abolishes involuntary servitude, which is not identical to slavery. And unfortunately, many of our people are voluntarily in servitude. So we enable this type of thing to go on. And what really brought this on is integration. Because in segregation, you couldn't get to our children. See, it goes back to your program, Sister Pamela, on this subject of our children being accessible to them in the first place. And we're willing for a few crumbs to give them access to us. And that's that is so offensive to me that you question, am I on drugs?
See, I'm sitting here in my dining room ready to go off on somebody. Just in my mind, I'm just imagining.
Really?
I mean, the how dare you?
That's right.
How dare you? But they think they can talk to us any kind of way because this is in their DNA. The essential relationship of master-slave has never changed. And that's why they feel they can order you to take a vaccine that is deadly, that is experimental, and ineffective. They're telling you in your face you can still get and contract COVID.
That's right. Okay, Dr. Ava, I don't know if you got so hot on the mic that you just dropped. But she just blew the mic
sorry,
up.
I'm sorry, I got cut off.
Oh, okay, there
go
you
ahead,
go. I thought she just blew the mic up. Good gracious.
No, I did. Something happened. But, but anyway, you all continue.
You're throwing those truth flames as usual. Being Dr. Ava, just throwing that truth flame.
Praise
but I think, you know, there's multiple conversations around what you're this part. I think that's I wanted to go back to Sister Naira right quick, Dr. Ava, because what we just talking about now, that's a whole nother conversation that is so many fights and so many fronts that is crazy. Like I said, I literally was in Minnesota in a camp fighting in line three, then coming down in Norfolk and then another fight. And while I was in Norfolk, you know, we were talking about climate change and the sisters, you know, some folks looking at us like, well, looking at one of my people like, what do you want to talk about climate change? We done had 11 shootings in the last couple of days. I ain't thinking about no sea level rise. I'm thinking about some gunshots, you know. So, you know, we on here talking about Sister Naira's medical school, but then we have to deal with the fact of all of the children that are getting taken. And then somebody else bring up sex trafficking or somebody else brings up, you know, we dealing with voting and somebody else.
Correct.
And that's why when we was in one year, maybe 2019 or 2020, and it's still our theme, the overarching theme that you had, Dr. Ava, was separation. Because separation is the best and only solution to all this. So when Dr. Ridgely said, I wish we had a hospital that Sister Naira can go to, if we were separate, we would have our own. If we separate, we ain't worried about nobody taking our children. If we separate, we ain't worried about this balance in our community. And I just think that's the thing that we have to look at. And it made me think about the question for Sister Naira. You know, when she went to the medical school, did she know? I mean, of course, she was not a medical student in the beginning. But did she know, or what was maybe some of the differences that she may recognize in the Cuban school that may not be what we see in America? Or did she, was there anything that stood out that was significant about the way they taught or teach?
Yes, sir. There was a lot that how Cuba taught. One of the things that we all noticed, like when I say we all, I mean all of the students from the U.S., is that Cuba is very, it's a very much community feel. So I know a lot of times we're here, we're in school, you're in college, you're in your classes, and it's pretty much every man for himself. But you had to get used to coming to class in Cuba, and your teacher's like, well, where's your classmate? Why didn't they come? You know, where you're responsible for your classmate, knowing where each other is, having to work together, you know, that was something that was very different for a lot of us coming from the States, because we're used to just being like, oh, every man for himself type of thing. We, you know, we here, we going to class, we ain't worried about nobody else. But Cuba was a very much community feel, very, very personable people. The doctors, they're, you know, I feel like here, you know, in the medical schools, once you get into residency, it's very much that hierarchy that, oh, you're a resident. You can't talk to the attending. You can't talk to the specialist or the medical student. You can't talk to. But it's very much like, hey, come in the operating room with me. Come over here with me. What do you like to do? Let me teach you. Let's sit down and talk. Let's, you know, it's a very much community feel. Even even living off campus and living in my own apartment, you know, neighbors look out for each other, which you don't, if you don't have enough rice, your neighbor's going to give you some rice and some extra beans, you know. So that was something that was very different as far as even, you know, being in school and in classes. And another thing that I really loved about how Cuba taught, Cuba teaches, they teach you how to treat a human being as a whole. So anybody that has heard me talk before, I talk about Cuba's ideology and how they talk about the biopsychosocial. And so every time we're learning about how to treat a patient, Cuba doesn't jump straight to this is drug. They go, no, no, no. These are the lifestyle changes that need to happen first. And then here's some plant medicine we can incorporate. Here are some, you know, then we go to here are some acupuncture, and then we talk about the drugs we can implement. So Cuba, and then they also talk about, oh, okay, this patient is sick. What is their household looking like? What is their social support looking like? What community activities are they involved in? So Cuba very much looks at each patient as a whole. So we're not only taught to, okay, you're coming in, you got high blood pressure, let's give you this drug. No, so how's it going? How are things at home? Oh, okay, did somebody just pass away? Let's talk about it. So we're taught, like, no, not only do you have to give them this drug, you have to give them that psychological support, and you have to treat all of these different aspects of their life to actually treat them and bring about a healthy human being. Just to name a few things that stood out to me and that I really loved about learning medicine in Cuba.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. I'm going to insert some accuracy here into the cases and deaths, but then show you this amazing comparison. But, yeah, the 96 deaths, I think that was the last 2 weeks. They're into measuring the Delta variant now. But when you go across the board right up to the current time, I'm going to use the state of Illinois for the comparison to Cuba because they have about the same population, somewhere around 12 million people are in Cuba and 12 million people in the state of Illinois. Since the beginning of the pandemic, Cuba has had 611,000 cases and 4,806 deaths. That's a nation of close to 12 million people. 4,806 deaths. The state of Illinois has had 1.5 million cases and 26,000 deaths. So you look at 26,000 deaths compared to 4,800 deaths. And then you ask me, you tell me, who has come up with a better approach to the problem.
That's right.
But anyway, we have Brother Jerry has a question and a comment.
As-salamu alaykum, family. To Sister Nair, I want to say that I like to say that I'm very proud of her. I don't know her, but she's my sister in the nation, and I'm very proud of her.
Yeah.
She's an inspiration to all. I've been watching this news. Yes, ma'am. I've been watching this news, the newscast for the last 5 weeks. I see a timeline developing whereby Pfizer asked for the booster shot to be approved, and then the FDA say they would not approve it because Pfizer hasn't gone through the trials, which will last until about January or February. Then the next week on NBC, they start attacking Ivor Merton, calling it misinformation, and to bring a doctor on who contradicts, who's supposed to support their argument, but contradicts their argument. Then the next week, the booster shot gets approved by the FDA. Then Raisha Malik comes on the next week, and she does a segment of attacking Ivor Merton. And then this week they approved the vaccine totally for Pfizer without saying it's completed its analysis, which contradicts what they said in the beginning. Now Joe was attacking ivermectin this morning. So what that tells me is somebody said something to somebody to do something. I do not believe that they assure you that this vaccine can't be that quick. So could you speak? I know you're probably going to speak to that tomorrow night, so I'm just asking, could you speak to this attack on ivermectin? Thank you.
Well, yes, sir. Actually, it goes back, and this same Jewish doctor in New York that we covered this week in the COVID section, he also makes reference to ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine. And the Cuban government had hydroxychloroquine as part of their COVID protocol. And you know, all medications, and I know Dr. Nairo will tell you that you have to deal with the patient, you have to deal with what stage the disease is in, all of these things. But we first, when the minister mentioned the 14 therapies in the world on July 4th, ivermectin was one of those. But we were still looking at it as something to be used for COVID. But already a group of pulmonologists, I think that's the proper term, but the lung specialists, a group of them in this country had learned that ivermectin was incredibly effective with handling and putting COVID-19 in check. And the recovery rate was incredible. Then Savior's Day of this year, we featured ivermectin when we did the therapy and treatment, and we have featured it in the final call. And so there's been a growing level of knowledge of the presence of this medication, and we also featured Dr. Safiya Shabazz, who prescribes ivermectin along with vitamin supplements, and she's treated 200 patients, more than 200 patients for COVID, and she hasn't lost anyone. What I'm finding is that when the final call covers something, it begins to gain traction in the Black community. And we also provide a platform for many Caucasian scientists who are world-renowned and have been censored, completely blacked out, on the social media platforms, such as Dr. Judy Mikovits, who worked on the HIV virus and worked for Anthony Fauci at NIH, and is in essence a whistleblower. We've lifted interviews from the former head research scientist and vice president of Pfizer, who retired from the company in 2011. He wasn't fired. He's not some outlier, some nut. He formed his own biotech company. He's pro-vaccine. And he said this whole issue of these variants is all about justifying the booster shots. He said if your immune system is capable of defeating a virus, it will defeat the variants. We had the inventor of the mRNA platform interviewed, who said he told the FDA, this vaccine is not ready for human use. You haven't put it through sufficient clinical trials. You know, and so this assault on ivermectin is a response to the wider and wider demand for ivermectin. Dr. Sophia said many of the requests she gets, if not most of them, for ivermectin are from white people. This country knows that this idea that the vaccinated people are growing in number, that's not true. That's why they're so desperate and acting insane. They're not getting the numbers they claim they're getting. There's something going around now. There's a YouTube clip of a sister who's a PhD in biology, one of those fields relevant to this virus, and she's testifying in Michigan about the ineffectiveness and harmfulness of these vaccines. A black woman. And she's saying, not only are you trying to push something that's harmful and ineffective, you're attacking our individual liberties. And I think that is what needs to be put out front more, is our rights as human beings are being violated. But I didn't mean to go that long, but that's what I think, that as you're saying, you laid it out, Brother Jerry, there's a relationship there, the timing. If you follow the news, you can see in what they condemn and what they uphold, what they feel threatened by. So there's an all-out assault on ivermectin. But I'm so sorry.
No.
Sister Naira and Brother Terrence for going on. And thank you, Brother Jerry, for your great call.
And we down for those last 2 minutes, Dr. Ava.
Yeah, we are. And I wanted to give our sister a chance to, she had any closing remarks. And I apologize to our callers that didn't get on. But, you know, you got to call early. Because if I see you all early, then I can time our main discussion and make it a little shorter to accommodate the calls. So, Dr. Naira, did you have anything you wanted to say as you close out?
I just would like to say thank you all for having me as a guest this evening. I enjoyed my time with you all.
We enjoyed you more. Wa alaikum salam. And I want to thank you, as one of our callers said, we are so proud of you.
That's right.
We can't express our joy and our thanks to Allah for the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and for Minister Louis Farrakhan. I just don't know how one human being does all that he does. I mean, from sending our babies to medical school in Cuba, you know, to helping
right.
our people in every walk of life. He's just
That's
amazing.
Right. That's right.
I'm telling you, it's amazing. So don't forget to tune in tomorrow night, everyone, to self-improvement study course on the practical self-care and handling COVID. And don't forget to visit me on MinisterAva.com. The Weapons of Self-Destruction Masterclass Part 3 is coming up on the 6th of September. It's entitled Never Settle for Less, Removing the Weapon of Wanting Nothing. And so thank you, Brother Terrence. Thank you, Sister Rona Muhammad, Sister Attorney Pamela Muhammad, all of you, Sister Donna Muhammad, all of you that make Elevated Places Network programming possible as we grow. And may Allah bless each and every one of you within the sound of my voice with light and love. Assalamu alaikum.
Wow, alaikum salam.